This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Wanted for murder, killed by police. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Friday, September 4. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The man wanted for the murder of a Trump supporter at a rally in Portland has been fatally shot by police as they attempted to arrest him 100 miles away in Washington.
Seven police officers involved in the death of Daniel Prude in Rochester have been suspended.
Applications for unemployment benefits fell to 881,000 last week, a decrease from a week earlier.
And among the back-to-school hot sellers like laptops are items like webcams and tents.
As you might imagine, this year's back-to-school season looks a little bit different than in the past. It seems like over the summer, schools were kind of in a buying frenzy, you might say, trying to just prepare to have students either there in person or remote. In both cases, they needed to buy a heck of a lot of new things that they probably weren't thinking about before.
Austin Hufford at the Wall Street Journal and manufacturers that are benefiting from new trends in back-to-school shopping. A man wanted in connection with a murder during a protest last weekend in Portland has been killed by authorities as they moved in to arrest him. Police say Michael Reinol was fatally shot last night by members of a federal fugitive task force in Lacey, Washington, after he pulled a gun on advancing officers. Lieutenant Ray Brady of the Thurston County Sheriff's Department says the incident occurred at around 7:30 p.m.
We can confirm that there was four members of the offender apprehension team that did fire their weapons.
U.S. Marshals said Mr. Reinol was pronounced dead at the scene. None of the officers involved were hurt. Mr. Reinol, who voiced his support for the loosely organized left-wing group Antifa on social media, was wanted on an arrest warrant for murder obtained earlier yesterday by police in Portland. He was under investigation for the fatal shooting last Saturday of Aaron Danielson, who was attending a pro-Trump rally. There's been swift action in Rochester, New York, after body cam footage was released this week in connection with the death of Daniel Prude back in March. The seven police officers involved in his asphyxiation death were suspended yesterday. Mr. Prude, a black man, died in a hospital 7 days after a March 23rd incident in which cops arrested him after responding to reports of a person acting erratically. He had a history of mental illness. His daughter, Tashira Prude.
Get our voices heard, because if we're silent on this, nothing's going to change. And in the next few months, there's going to be another unarmed black person killed by the police. This has to stop.
The medical examiner has ruled Mr. Prude's death as a homicide, saying he died of asphyxiation and acute PCP intoxication. A police report also said that officers applied a spit sock to Mr. Prude, which is a hood-type device used to prevent someone from spitting and spreading disease. He later vomited and became unresponsive. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden met with the family of Jacob Blake, the black man left paralyzed after being shot multiple times in the back by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
We should make sure what all the facts are in, and then a decision to be made. But based on its appearance, it seems as though there was, unless they can show something different than what everybody saw, it looks like it was an overuse of force.
Mr. Biden's visit yesterday came 2 days after President Trump traveled to Kenosha with a message of law and order. Mr. Biden, by the way, is getting criticism from some for meeting with Mr. Blake's father, who the Washington Times says has posted racially charged and anti-Semitic messages on social media. Meanwhile, President Trump held a rally last evening in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, speaking inside an airport hangar in La Trobe. Separately, The Atlantic is reporting that Mr. Trump in 2018 had spoken disparagingly of fallen U.S. military personnel buried in Europe, saying he called Marines buried near Paris losers. The president yesterday said the story was false and a total lie. When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. New applications for unemployment benefits fell last week, which could be a sign of a slowly improving labor market. The Labor Department says weekly initial claims for jobless benefits fell by 130,000 to a seasonally adjusted 881,000 in the week ended August 29. Here to break down the data is Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, down from a week earlier, but still extraordinarily high.
This number alone, absolutely. This number is the lowest that we've had since late March, when both the pandemic and the economic downturn exploded onto the scene. And to provide some context relative to that 881,000, these new claims were as high as 6.8 million in late March, and the highest we'd seen before this time was back in 1982 when we had 695,000. Now, there are a couple of real asterisks here with respect to these numbers. So there was an additional 152,000 people filing new claims under the federal program from the CARES Act meant to help gig workers, among others. And so the total there was 759,000. So that number is relevant. And there were also some changes in seasonal adjustment made by the Labor Department, which is essentially saying they're changing the statistical formula, which I think broadly is understood to be appropriate at this point, but that sort of took away the opportunity to compare the latest week's number with the previous week. And so we have to look at the broader picture and understand that one way or the other, these new claims are historically elevated, and there's no disputing that.
All right, so why those adjustments? Is that fair?
You know, I think mostly it's just sort of along the lines of seasonal adjustment is very complicated. It tries to, for example, take into effect the regular late summer shutdowns on the part of automakers, the fact that you have coming and going on the part of educators, teachers, and the like. And the Labor Department felt as if it needed to do a better job of that by changing the mathematical formula. I think economists understand that that's appropriate, but it makes the translation just a little more complicated.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. We're talking about the newest claims for jobless benefits. There were 881,000 applications for the week ended August 29. We've seen some of these recent announcements, too. I think United Airlines announcing 16,000 layoffs. I think Ford is rolling into some buyout program for salaried workers. What kind of impact could that have in the coming, say, weeks or months?
Yeah, there's a growing list, Gordon. You got United, 16,700, Ford, 1,400, MGM Resorts, 18,000, Coca-Cola, 4,000, American Airlines, 19,000. So this list is large and growing. And so this adds to our concern that this isn't just sort of a temporary situation in our country. There is a risk that we're going to see what had been hoped to have been, in large part, temporary job loss is not going to be able to avoid some permanent job loss here. And so it's really an unbalanced economy that we have right now. It is that proverbial tale of two cities. So on the positive side, beneficiaries of low interest rates as well as innovation are doing relatively well. The housing market faring because of low mortgage interest rates, record low mortgage interest rates, as a matter of fact, that helps mortgage refinancing. Stock market doing well. Technology firms doing well because they are sort of the bridge that we're all sort of hanging on to as we try to transition to the next thing.
So for some of these small businesses, and I think specifically restaurants, those jobs, servers, bus boys, things along those lines, those jobs may not come back if these businesses are closing permanently.
what happens to those folks? Do they get absorbed by other eateries? It's kind of hard to imagine in this environment.
I think that's sort of the lesson we learned from the last recession is the longer people are unemployed, the harder it is for them to find a new job. In part because there's an unwillingness or reticence sometimes to seek employment outside of the sector where one was employed previously, but also the fact that demand is going to be slow to come back. And I think, you know, it probably will behoove some of those people to look for jobs outside the area that they are previously employed, as painful as that is.
Nice, Mark. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. One other stat here, by the way, the number of people collecting unemployment benefits through regular state programs, which cover most workers, decreased by 1.24 million to about 13.3 million for the week ended August 22. 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A man suspected of fatally shooting a Trump supporter at a racial justice protest in Portland last weekend has died. Michael Reinhold was fatally shot by police in Washington State last night during a traffic stop.
There was shots that were fired into the vehicle. And the subject fled from the vehicle, at which time there was additional shots that were fired.
Number two.
The release of a video of the arrest of a black man who died by asphyxiation in March after that confrontation in upstate Rochester, New York, has prompted new protests. In New York City's Times Square, three people were slightly injured when a car drove into a group of some 300 activists calling for the cops in the Daniel Prude case to be arrested and charged in his death. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren has taken action.
I am suspending the officers in question today against the advice of counsel. And I urge the Attorney General to complete her investigation.
Number three.
Yesterday's tech rout on Wall Street came as a stomach-churning surprise to some, but Susan Schmidt of Aviva Investor says some experts thought the tech sector in particular was getting overheated.
We were in record territory, and remember that whenever we get to record territory, people notice that and they start to get nervous.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average shrank just under 3%. Temple University has moved almost all classes online for the rest of the semester after a COVID-19 outbreak big enough to nudge Philadelphia's city-wide positivity rate upward. More than 200 students have now tested positive in the outbreak. A new heat wave is the last thing California needs. Residents asked to save electricity by running their AC no cooler than 78 degrees and unplugging as many appliances as possible. For crews just making headway in the fire zones, the drier, hotter conditions will hurt. The San Francisco Bay Area expects to see highs on Sunday, ranging from 100 to 105 degrees. And the Royal Australian Mint is minting one donation dollar for each Australian citizen and putting them into circulation. 25 million coins that can be used as normal currency, but the government's hoping people will donate them directly to help other Aussies who might be in need of a good day.
Oh, all right, so if you get one as part of change when you're buying something, you're supposed to donate it.
I guess that's how it works. If you see someone outside who's experiencing homelessness, or there's some charity that
and you happen to have this dollar on you or with the green coloring or whatever, you're supposed to give it away.
It's not a green, it's a coin and it's printed, donation dollar on
the back. But it's clearly marked as that's what this is for. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ross. Glad you could be with us. The average U.S. school district will spend nearly $400,000 on products related to the pandemic response. The most popular back-to-school gear this year, besides pencils and notebooks, are keyboard covers, webcams, and plexiglass. Austin Hufford, manufacturing reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says increased demand from the tens of thousands of U.S. schools and colleges is providing a boost to some of these product makers. Austin set this up.
As you might imagine, this year's back-to-school season looks a little bit different than in the past. It seems like over the summer, schools were kind of in a buying frenzy, you might say, trying to just prepare to have students either there in person or remote. In both cases, they needed to buy a heck of a lot of new things that they probably weren't thinking about before.
All right, so laptops for one in short supply, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it for remote learning, laptops, I hear that like the Chromebook is, I guess, an affordable laptop is in particularly high demand, but also things like webcams and noise-canceling headsets. You know, if you have three kids at the kitchen table, you can't all be speaking to each other at once, you know, so it becomes pretty problematic if the students are learning at home without the technology they need.
And a lot of... I say a lot of schools, at least given the weather right now, tents are an option for outdoor instruction.
Yeah, I spoke to this one company and Anchor Industries, and they thought that they were going to have a horrible year. Basically, they make tents for weddings and events. If you think about it, when COVID hit, they're like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? But then they actually have had a record, some record months, because basically schools are and colleges are buying these tents in massive quantities to serve as sort of outdoor spaces where they could maybe some cases students could take off their mask or at least give a chance to kind of get out in some open air, but still be in shade. And so they have been really trying to ramp up production, but it's obviously pretty difficult in the COVID times.
Speaking of air, number of schools, at least ones that can afford it, I guess, have made changes to filters and fans, things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, you hear a lot of this thing called MERV, M-E-R-V, and it's like a type of like, you know, high-intensity filter that's, I guess, recommended for virus protection. And so a lot of schools are trying to call up their AC guys and figure out, okay, can we install this filter? And in every case, it doesn't always work. You might have to upgrade your whole system, and it becomes pretty costly. Other schools are also installing standalone air purification systems. I mean, kind of, it's like, this is all new, you know? We weren't like, you know, antivirus experts before this all, but right. Schools are having to become that.
We're speaking with Austin Hufford, U.S. manufacturing reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a story entitled, Hot Back-to-School Items During Coronavirus Are Tents and Webcams. I thought it was interesting, too, you said in the story, there is a challenge to making safety products for schools. How come?
Well, every school district, there's a lot of regulations, and they all are different across the country. And so that means that, a system that might work in New York might not be appropriate for Ohio, or might not be appropriate for Minnesota, or even within that school district or system. And so that means that manufacturers can't just sign a single deal with like a Walmart to get their plexiglass in front of all their the cashiers. They have to kind of work with every single school individually to get it working. One example is that in New York, there are some concerns over the kind of plexiglass style barriers and if they were a fire risk. And so kind of over the summer, there was kind of back and forth regulations over whether that would be allowed or not. And so that just is one example of how kind of the regulatory environment makes it pretty hard to sell stuff into schools compared to like stores and those kinds of things.
Thanks, Austin. Austin Hufford, U.S. manufacturing reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
The news, first, fast, and free of noise. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday, September 4. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The man wanted for killing a protester at a Portland rally has himself been killed by authorities trying to arrest him. 7 Rochester cops suspended in connection with the death of Daniel Prude. A search in Cleveland is underway for a suspect who fatally shot a police officer in his car last night. There's an informal deal to avoid a government shutdown at the end of this month. Voting by mail begins today in North Carolina, and the New Hampshire high schooler who swam the English Channel, her story in about 20 minutes. With the CDC's new order banning landlords from evicting tenants that can no longer afford to pay rent due to a pandemic-related expense through the end of the year, it could ensure all of the nation's 40 million rental households keep their residences during the pandemic. But the Trump administration likely faces a slew of legal and political challenges over the rule that's trying to save tens of millions of Americans from homelessness. More from Sylvan Lane, reporter at The Hill. Sylvan, what do we know?
So the CDC a couple of days ago issued a pretty unprecedented action. It declared that landlords can't evict any tenants simply because they can't pay their rent due to the coronavirus pandemic, whether they've lost their job, whether they've, unfortunately suffered from the pandemic or have had to deal with the costs of doing that. So the CDC is saying that you cannot evict anybody below a certain income threshold from their apartments until the end of 2020.
Okay, so just slightly off base, why would the CDC issue this and not say, I don't know, housing and urban development or an executive order from the president?
Now, that's a great question. So this is, the CDC has never done anything like this before. But what the CDC is using here is a 1940s law that gives them pretty broad authority to do whatever they need to do to stop, you know, an infectious disease from being spread across state lines. So the logic here is that the CDC is using its power to do that to prevent somebody from, you know, getting evicted and moving in with family in a different state, which they see as a threat to spread the coronavirus further than it might have already been going in the first place.
Well, the ripple effects that you explored in the story, too, seem like they could be quite damaging. We think, obviously, of people potentially getting evicted and then being homeless. You've got landlords, I guess, who might not be able to pay mortgages or loans, right? Which could create some sort of, I guess, some small housing crisis.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're totally right. Now, the idea of this is to prevent people from losing their homes in the middle of this pandemic. And, you know, ideally by January 2021, hopefully we'll have, you know, some sort of well-distributed vaccine. Hopefully we'll be in a good spot there. Obviously too soon to say one way or another. But this does create some problems further down the road because tenants who, you know, reap the benefits of this order and don't get evicted are still going to have to pay rent that they owe per the terms of their lease come January 2021.
Right.
Now, obviously, that's going to be pretty hard if you lost your job or, you know, haven't been able to make up your savings. And, you know, small landlords, let's say people who own maybe a couple of buildings who may not be able to afford to go without the lost income, they might go into debt, they might be forced to sell, they might face foreclosure themselves. So there's this nasty ripple effect that can start without some sort of federal rental assistance to try to cover these costs that will be building up in this, you know, time without evictions.
We're speaking with Sylvan Lane, reporter at The Hill. He covers finance and economics. His piece is called Trump Eviction Ban Tests Limits of CDC Authority. Is there anything Congress might do?
So the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives did pass a bill in June that would provide $100 billion for rental relief. You know, that's intended to cover the rent that people can no longer pay. So you try to mitigate some of this problem where you have this debt building up that someone's going to have to pay. There's been support from Republicans. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said on Tuesday that the administration is actually willing to approve some sort of rental assistance and another coronavirus relief bill. But negotiations between Democrats and Republicans have been in a stalemate for a few months now. There doesn't appear to be a lot of progress going on there. But, you know, we could reasonably expect that getting some sort of rental assistance is a high priority for both sides. So hopefully there's some sort of breakthrough within the next couple of weeks.
Were there any lessons from, say, the housing crisis from the Great Recession or any other periods like that?
So in terms of, you know, the prospect of trying to avoid this massive crisis of people losing their homes, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a little bit of scarring from that. But the nature of these situations is different enough that there is, you know, more willingness on both sides to provide some relief. You know, in the foreclosure crisis in 2008, a lot of that was driven by predatory lending by banks and home lenders. It was driven by these broad, you know, systemic issues that there was a lot of blame within the financial sector that you could pin there. But, you know, with this virus, you can't really blame anybody who lost their job because of this virus on not being able to pay rent.
Thanks, Sylvan. Sylvan Lane, who's a reporter at The Hill. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Friday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, by this point, we should all be mindful that there are cameras on us at all times, especially when you're inside a business. A couple of scammers in the UK failed to remember that when they planted a fake hair in their food in an attempt to get their meal for free. According to the New York Post, the customers at the barbecue restaurant in Blackburn notified the waitress about their find, but she skillfully went right to the restaurant security camera. What she found was footage that showed the man reach into his shorts, pull something out, and then put it into his food. After reviewing the footage, the manager says he argued with the two men for about 10 minutes. Eventually, they forked over $26. Unfortunately, the total bill had come to around $88, leaving the restaurant at a loss despite the evidence.
Wow.
And I guess they said police didn't really want to get involved either.
Really?
It's a civil matter. This is in the UK. Their laws are a little different there. Yeah. I think here in the US, you probably could have gotten the police involved in something like that. I think with security camera footage and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but in the UK, they said it's really not a police matter when something like this happens.
Wow. That's fraud. I mean,
yes.
I guess is broad definition.
Yeah. I mean, again, you have the evidence, you know, right there.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a question here.
Wow. Can you imagine? I don't know if she actually brought like an iPad to the table and showed them or something like that, which would be pretty embarrassing, but a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, again, you should know that there are cameras on you,
yeah.
Especially when you're inside of a restaurant or any kind of business, really. And it's been some time since soul music legend Al Green was trending, probably not since before trending was a thing. That all changed this week, however. It all started when Green tweeted a photo of a Walgreens store sign that had been slightly altered. A photo of a young shirtless Al Green taken from the cover of his 1975 Greatest Hits album had replaced the logo's W, and the sign thus read, Al Green's. The singer, of course, wanted answers, asking who did this with the crying laughing emoji. His tweet was liked and retweeted nearly 500,000 times. With that kind of traction, Green quickly got his answer, finding out that it was the work of an artist and graphic designer in Westchester, Pennsylvania, back in 2018. Still, Walgreens was happy to jokingly take credit for the sign by quoting a classic Al Green song title, We Were Just Tired of Being Alone. Other Twitter users were definitely down with this unintended collaboration. One user suggested that the new Walgreens slogan be, on the corner of love and happiness, while another floated a more pandemic-friendly motto, Let's stay together, 6 feet apart. Yeah.
That was really clever.
Yes. I don't know how this came up all of a sudden now, something that was done 2 years ago.
Yeah, it is kind
of
weird.
Sudden, but that's the way the internet works sometimes. Sometimes, yeah. Again, he got wind of this. You know, he's famous, has lots of followers.
Right.
He tweets it, and then all of a sudden, everybody finds out about it.
Right. So the local artist, hardly anybody noticed it.
Right.
Right, for 2 years or whatever.
Right.
And then Al Green finally gets a hold of it.
A little bit of a local joke. Now it's now everybody across the whole nation knows.
He said it was, he's a graphic designer, but I think he said it was pretty easy to do. He found, you know, a piece of foam or whatever and had the picture of Al Green printed on it, and then he just plastered it across the W.
Yeah, I think you and I could have done that probably. Yeah. But didn't think of it, which is why we're not internet famous now.
And he got the publicity in Philadelphia. I think Al Green's from Arkansas.
Right.
Maybe some Arkansas Walgreens will take this up and further promote his stuff. But he hasn't been. What was the last time Al Green made news?
That's what I mean.
Right?
We're talking
80s?
The 80s, sometime in the mid 70s, 80s, probably.
80s, right?
Yeah.
That's funny. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people, ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, there are more ways than ever to connect to America's First News. You can tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. Millions of people are slated to get out of town this Labor Day. Las Vegas, Denver, and Orlando are ranked among the top three most booked cities, according to recently published data from the travel planning app TripIt. And compared to last year, trips to Orlando and Phoenix are up despite being hotspots for COVID-19 outbreaks. Findings indicated that cities like San Francisco, Chicago, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and New York ranked among the top 25 destinations, despite some being hotspots as well for COVID-19 cases early in the pandemic. TripIt says while flight bookings for the holiday weekend are just a third of what reservations were last year, destinations to Florida have surged 200% over last year. Of those reservations booked, 12% include flights to Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, and Tampa among the top 25. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump criticized Portland police for not arresting a man under investigation for the fatal shooting of a right-wing activist during last week's unrest in the city in a tweet posted early today, apparently before learning suspect Michael Reinhall had already been shot dead by U.S. Marshals in Washington State. Details from Thurston County Sheriff Lieutenant Ray Brady are limited.
We can confirm that there was 4 members of the offender apprehension team that did fire their weapons.
Number two.
Rochester, New York Mayor Lovely Warren has suspended with pay all seven police officers involved in the death of Daniel Prude. She told reporters she first saw the video of Prude's March arrest after only a month ago and criticized the police chief for waiting that long to inform her.
Number three.
Body camera video made public shows a Washington, D.C. police officer who fatally shot a young man Wednesday fired once after seeing the 18-year-old turn while holding a gun in his right hand. D.C. Metropolitan Police Chief Peter Newsham said releasing the video so quickly was a Herculean task.
One of the reasons that we put it out as quickly as we did is because there's a lot of misinformation in the current climate that we have, not only here in Washington, D.C., but across the country.
Democratic nominee Joe Biden spent most of his time in the battleground state of Wisconsin listening to Kenosha residents about their concerns. As the community reels from Jacob Blake's shooting, Biden says he spoke with Blake by phone for 15 minutes during a private meeting with the family. North Carolina's election boards are reminding residents voting twice is a felony. President Trump this week suggested at an appearance in the state voters should vote once by mail and again in person on Election Day to test the integrity of the voting system. In Pennsylvania yesterday, he adjusted that message.
What you have to do is send in your early ballot and then go and make sure that ballot is tabulated or counted. And if it's not counted, vote.
The pandemic has led to more UFO sightings. Data from the National UFO Reporting Center shows reports are up 51% compared to the same period in 2019. Of the 5,000 sightings, 20% were in April alone at the height of the lockdowns. The Pentagon announced last month it's forming a new task force led by the Navy to investigate UFOs. Just in time, I'd say.
Well, what do you suspect? We're sitting around with nothing to do. We just stare up into space, right? Of course we're going to see things.
Is it flickering? Is it moving?
6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for joining us. A 16-year-old from New Hampshire successfully swam across the English Channel, completing a 33-mile swim from Dover in the UK to Calais, France in 14 hours. Vera Rivard of Springfield crossed roly-poly one-foot waves in chilly 64-degree water, accompanied by a pilot boat. The Valley News says the student from Carsage Regional High School chose a 21-mile route, but tides and marine traffic added 12 more miles. She couldn't leave the water or touch anyone or anything that floats. She stopped to tread water every 45 minutes to rehydrate and eat an energy gel. She completed a long-distance swim around Manhattan Island in July and hopes to swim a third major open water course to Santa Catalina Island off California in the future. That would be the third in a triple crown of long-distance swims. Again, she's 16. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.